हरे कृष्ण। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवराधारी जय, जय गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरिवराधारी जय, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरा वनचारी यमुना, यमुना तीरा वनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare, Bolo Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Hitai Gaura Haribol, 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 Hitai Gaura Haribol. Shri Radha Madan Mohan Lalita Devi ki jai, Shri Radha Vrindavan Bihari ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Nitai Gaur Bhimanandi Hari Hari Bo.
Hare Krishna. Aaj Jeeva Goswami Prabhupada ka Tirubhav Mahotsav hai. It's a Disciplines Day of Jeeva Goswami. And it was said about Jiva Goswami that he was a very good teacher, very good scholar, amazing devotee, and amazing manager. And what a perfect occasion to have the pleasure of having Dr. Ravi M. Gupta, Radhika Raman Prabhu, with us, who also exhibits similar qualities. An amazing teacher, an amazing manager. He is the director of the religious studies program at Utah State University. Nirdeshak religious study program ke Utah State University mein. An amazing devotee who has grown up studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Finished his master's at 16, is that right, Prabhu?
17.
Which is still a dream for us. And a PhD around 21, is that right? From Oxford. And a wonderful devotee and an eminent scholar. So let's welcome Shri Radhika Raman Prabhu for enlightening us. Hare Krishna.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So first of all, I want to thank the devotees, particularly His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, His Grace Gauranga Prabhu, and all the brahmacharis here at Govardhan Eco Village for giving me this opportunity to glorify Srila Jiva Goswami on the occasion of his disappearance day. There's so much that can be said about Srila Jiva Goswami, and Maharaj is going to enlighten us and guide us into meditation on Srila Jiva Goswami. I'll try my best to serve as an introduction to what he says. My goal is I want to provide a context for us to understand the impact of what Srila Jiva Goswami has given for us as devotees, for our movement and our sampradaya as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and indeed for the philosophical heritage of this world. Srila Prabhupada, he says in more than one place that Jiva Goswami was the greatest philosopher the world has known. And I'll be honest, when I first started my PhD, which, as Harivamsa Prabhu said, was on the topic of Jiva Goswami, I studied Jiva Goswami at Oxford, and I was in that mood of academic environment. I was a little skeptical. I thought, greatest philosopher maybe in our sampradaya, or maybe in India, but how in the whole world? That just seems too much. That seems too big. And that was simply because I had no idea of who this person was or is. And the more I studied Srila Jiva Goswami's works, the more I realized that Srila Prabhupada was not exaggerating. It wasn't hyperbole. He wasn't saying something just for the sake of building it up. Really, Srila Jiva Goswami, when you hear about him, and if you read the various persons who have written about him, both devotees in our sampradaya and philosophers and thinkers and academics outside of our tradition, every one of them has superlatives to state about Jiva Goswami. One of the greatest philosophers India has known, the highest court of appeals in doctrinal matters so long as he lived, the greatest scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam. These are the words that people, anyone who spends time studying Jiva Goswami has to say about him. So hopefully today we can get an opportunity to get a little taste as to why that's the case. 500 years ago, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought a wave of devotion, of bhakti, all throughout India. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells us in Chaitanya Charitamrita that every place he went, anyone he saw or met was touched by the power of bhakti. And when they met someone else, they infected, that bhakti was contagious, and they gave it to others whom they met as well. And in this way, there was a flood of bhakti. Except for one place. There was one place where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, and it seemed, at first at least, that it was ineffective. That place was immune to his power. And that was Banaras or Kashi. And the reason for that, Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us, that in Banaras or Kashi, that place was overrun with those who are Mayavadis or impersonalists, who study Vedanta philosophy in great detail and argue that God is not a person. And because of this impersonalism, they couldn't be touched by Mahaprabhu's great power. So this did not bother him, but it bothered the Vaishnavas who were there, who could not bear the thought, who couldn't bear the sight that Mahaprabhu was being criticized in this way. And so they begged him, please engage with them, give them your mercy too. And so the devotees organized a great assembly of the brightest minds of Banaras, persons like Prakashananda Saraswati, a great learned Vedantist, and his hundreds, thousands of sannyasi disciples, all learned in Vedanta. And when Mahaprabhu met them, they told him, they said, we don't mind the fact that you are engaged in bhakti, that you're doing sankirtan. That's okay. It's a good. We know it's a good thing. But why don't you study Vedanta? Bhakti is for the commoners, for the sentimentalists, bhavuka, the emotionalists. Real intelligent people, they study philosophy, they meditate. And so Mahaprabhu, at that point, he engaged them with them in multiple levels. But he had this wonderful conversation with them on Vedanta philosophy, talking about Shankaracharya and Gaudiya Vaishnava Vedanta and pointing out the various flaws and different perspectives and thinkings. By his philosophical acumen, by his humility in the way that he presented it, and by his spiritual potency, his brilliance, he changed their hearts. Now, 500 years ago, Mahaprabhu did this. He showed that devotees are not fools. That a devotee, a person following the path of bhakti, is not doing so because they have no intelligence. Rather, bhakti or devotional service is the culmination, the fruit of intelligence, the highest level of it. He showed that 500 years ago. But what about the future? Every generation of devotees has faced the same criticism. Even to this day in India, no, you hear this point, that bhakti is for the simpleton. It's for the person who doesn't have much intelligence. If you fail at everything in life, then you become a devotee. Try becoming an engineer first, a doctor, a lawyer. If you can't do that, go do business and commerce. If you can't do that, join the arts and the humanities and study history. If you can't even do that, and you fail in all areas, then go become a devotee. This is what people think. When I was a child, and we used to come to India with this shikha and short hair, my relatives used to get very nervous. They would talk to my parents and say, you know, inki school mein bharti nahi hui kya? Hum yahan pe India mein karwa de. Did they fail in all their subjects of study? We can help here. They assumed that if we're devotees, we must have failed. So that criticism is true, has been going on not just 500 years, it's been going on all this time. And it was Srila Jiva Goswami's mission, his task. He decided, he took it upon himself, deputed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the senior Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatan. He, for the first time, provided a comprehensive theological system grounded in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy, showing how Mahaprabhu's philosophy can stand up in front of any philosophical system, that it is the culmination of knowledge, and that no one should think of devotees as being foolish or simpletons. Srila Jiva Goswami showed this first and foremost by his writing. Sri Jiva is famous for his prodigious pen. He wrote so much literature we can hardly imagine. You know how long Srimad Bhagavatam is, right? 18,000 verses. It takes us years, if not a lifetime, to study it deeply. The largest book in the world, Mahabharata, composed of how many verses? 100,000. Srila Jiva Goswami alone wrote four times that amount, 400,000. I've yet to find someone who's actually read Mahabharata cover to cover. Everyone's watched the television serial, and so we think we know it. But the reality is, the Mahabharata is an unlimited ocean. Hardly anyone's actually read the whole thing, all 100,000 verses. Jiva Goswami wrote four times that amount on his own. Historians have chronicled that he's written 25 different books in every area of thinking and philosophy. Actually, those 25 books can be categorized into four different areas. He wrote books on philosophy, the most famous of them being Shat Sandarbha, his Bhagavata Sandarbha. He wrote books on literature, literary books, or Leela works, the most famous of them being Gopal Champu. He wrote books that were commentaries on other literatures, the most famous of that being Durgama Sangamini, his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or Nectar of Devotion by Rupa Goswami. And he wrote manuals on how to write books, grammar works, the most famous of them being Harinamamrita Vyakaran. In fact, so expert he was, he wrote this book called Gopal Champu. Gopal Champu is a large book of stories about Krishna's pastimes written in the style of Champu literature. Champu means it's a combination of verse and prose. Just like Bhagavad Gita is all verse, it's shloka, right? Bhagavatam is all verse, except for, you know, those sections in the fifth canto where it straight lines, no verse, it's difficult to recite. That's prose, straight writing. So Champu is a style of writing which combines verse and prose. Jiva Goswami was the one who developed Champu literature into what it is, into its highest level. There was Champu literature before him, but it was very, very basic. He actually created the genre of Champu writing, a new area. And for that reason, he wrote a manual for others called Samanya Champu Lakshana, the characteristics of Champu literature, as a guide for others who might want to write Champu style writing. In other words, his works were seen as authoritative, not only because they're presenting the highest levels of Krishna bhakti, but philosophers and literary scholars and others throughout India were studying his works in order to understand how best to write. What is Sanskrit grammar? His breadth of writing was significant. If you look at any of the great writers that are present today writing, typically if someone is a famous novelist, suppose you have someone who writes novels, are they likely to write philosophical works? No. Philosophy is not going to be their area. Suppose someone is a great philosopher, are they going to write pieces of fine literature and poetry? No, typically not. If someone is a linguist writing about grammar, are they going to be successful in other fields of writing? No. People become great as they specialize in one fine area. Jiva Goswami was someone who wrote fine philosophy, fine literature, fine grammar, and fine commentary. Four areas that typically are not found in a single person. Now, that's a lot of writing, and that's a breadth of skill. And we might even understand that breadth if Jiva Goswami's writing was very superficial. Right? People can write a lot of different styles. I wrote 70 books, someone can say. But then those 70 books or 80 books tend to be quite superficial in nature. But Jiva Goswami's writing was not only broad, but it contained so much depth as well. Each one of his books became the standard in their field, in his time and today. When I was studying Jiva Goswami, his Sanskrit was very difficult and very unusual, and I would struggle with it. He used to use a lot of abstract nouns in his writing. In Sanskrit, this is nouns ending with twa or ta. Haritva, sakshad haritvena. Haritva means not Hari, but the condition of being like Hari. Or in English, we use this the word ness, like a chair and chairness, or human being and humanness, the condition of being a human. This is an abstract noun. So Jiva Goswami was using so many abstract nouns that it was becoming very difficult to understand what he was saying. And so I went to a colleague, a scholar at Oxford who had finished his PhD recently before me. And he said, and I asked him, I said, what's going on here? Can you help me understand why Jiva Goswami is writing in this way? And he read a little bit and he said, oh yes, this is clearly the writing of a person who is well-versed in Nyaya, in Indian logic. They use abstract writing like this. In order to understand Jiva Goswami, you should first study Nyaya, and then you can understand him. Jiva Goswami quotes from other philosophers. He'll quote from Shankaracharya's Vedanta Bhashya or Ramanujacharya's Sri Bhashya.
in such a way, he'll quote the first words of a passage and the last words, leave everything out in the middle, assuming that you can fill in the rest, right? He had it memorized like this. Every philosophical system, Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva, all of these areas, he's quoting them at his fingertips. In fact, it took me once a whole day to translate one sentence from the Sandarbhas. And in order to explain it, it took a footnote, the length of a page, trying to explain. Jiva Goswami does so much in one sentence. Don't have the time, or we don't have the space to go into the details of how he does it and the argument he makes. But that argument in one sentence, two sentences, was so detailed and so sophisticated and so much packed into it that in order to explain it, I ended up looking at the commentaries of Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, different philosophers, and trying to make sense of what he says. This much to explain two sentences. One final thing to give you a sense of the depth of the knowledge he was giving us. His command of every field of philosophy. Jiva Goswami wrote 25 major works, yes? And of those 25 works, I spent 4 or 5 years for my PhD studying just one of those 25, namely Shat Sandarbha or Bhagavata Sandarbha. Bhagavata Sandarbha has 6 parts to it. This is why it's called Shat Sandarbha. Of the 6 parts, I spent my PhD, those years, studying just one of those 6 parts, the third one, called Paramatma Sandarbha. In Paramatma Sandarbha, there are 105 chapters. I focused on just one of those 105 chapters. And even that one, I did not cover completely. And that was enough to get a PhD at Oxford University. Can you imagine how many PhDs can be produced just on Jiva Goswami? What person we're talking about? What kind of brilliant mind? Now that in itself would be enough for any of us to bow before him, to be humbled in front of his great intellect. But that's only the start of Jiva Goswami's glories, only the beginning. Most people who are great philosophers and thinkers in this world, they're good at philosophy and terrible at other things. Most philosophers are not very good managers, for example. We have trouble managing our own lives, what to speak of the lives of others. Because the world of the mind and the world on the ground, oof, 2 different worlds. Right? This is why philosophers, academics always, they're in their ivory towers, their head in the clouds. It's a stereotype, but there's some truth to it. Jiva Goswami was not one of those people. Not only was he a great philosopher, but he was a great leader as well. You see, after the departure of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from this world, when the Lord leaves, then there's a vacuum that's left behind. Krishna Svadhamo Pagate Dharma Jnanadi Bhisaha. Even when a great acharya leaves, there's a vacuum that's left behind. And confusion sometimes is there. At that point, in the fledgling movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is going to provide unity of philosophy, of doctrine, of understanding? Who is going to bring the Vaishnavas together and say, this is the proper Siddhanta. This is how we should be united in Mahaprabhu's movement. That responsibility fell on the shoulders of Srila Jiva Goswami. He was so much loved by the older Goswamis, especially Sri Rup, Sri Sanatan, well, all of them, Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, that they open-heartedly welcomed him when he came to Vrindavan. He himself was the, Jiva Goswami was the epitome of humility.
He spent his early years just humbly serving the Vaishnavas of Vrindavan, the older Goswamis. And they welcomed him with so much love. And as they departed this world, Jiva Goswami took responsibility for training the next generation of Vaishnavas, of providing a vision for the future of the Gaudiya Vaishnava movement. The devotees from Bengal, Sri Janava Devi, her son Veerabhadra Goswami, and so many others used to come regularly to Vrindavan to consult with Srila Jiva Goswami and make a joint plan for the future of Mahaprabhu's movement, both in North India and in Bengal and in Orissa. In fact, this process was going on even before. Srila Prabhupada explains that all six of the Goswamis used to gather together. You know where? In the Radha Damodar temple. Why there? Because Jiva Goswami was so dear to their hearts. They saw that this younger Goswami, this Jiva, is going to one day carry on leadership in Mahaprabhu's movement. So Srila Prabhupada says very sweetly that the Goswamis used to get together in the Radha Damodar temple to plan for the worldwide expansion of the Krishna consciousness movement. And therefore he says that this Radha Damodar temple is the spiritual center of our movement. It's the heart of our movement. Because, why? Because Srila Jiva Goswami was the heart of the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan. So he provided that vision, that leadership, that unity. And one of the most important ways in which he did it was by being a very effective teacher. He trained the next generation, Srinivas, Narottam, Shyamananda. These three young men, none of whom were his initiated, his Diksha disciples, and yet were sent by their spiritual masters to Jiva Goswami to understand Vaishnav Shastra and Vaishnav Siddhanta. Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Pandit. Now, again, I want you to reflect on this from a bigger perspective. In my field in academia, we see this all the time, that those who are very, very good scholars, the top professors in their field, are typically not very good teachers because they have a hard time taking that level of knowledge and bringing it to a level that their student can understand. This is true of musicians also. Some of the most expert musicians, virtuosos, it comes naturally, it flows. And it's very difficult to slow things down and to explain it to a student, isn't it? So I often tell my students that yes, you can go to study at Harvard, but the reputation may be great, but don't assume that you're going to get the best instruction. Because the most brilliant minds are not always the ones who can teach the best. And similarly, those who give their heart to teaching are often not the greatest scholars of the world. But Srila Jiva Goswami was both a great scholar and a very powerful teacher who had a vision that if the Mahaprabhu's movement is going to flourish, it needs to be given to the next generation. The next generation is a priority. And he spent so much energy and time training many, many young devotees who came to him to learn the mood and mission and scriptures of our sampradaya. And through them, he created this whole leadership strategy of sending the works of the Goswamis all throughout Bengal so that everyone understands what is the proper Siddhanta as taught by Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatan. A great scholar, a great manager, a great leader, a great teacher. And just these three, scholar, leader, teacher, would be more than anyone can imagine. And yet, there's more. Jiva Goswami was not only a scholar, not only a leader, not only a teacher, but he was a very, very effective manager as well. You see, each one of the Goswamis, after they established their temples, Madan Mohan, Govinda, Gopinath, they all left everything they had in the care of Sri Jiva Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami spent his days doing bhajan on the banks of Radha Kunda. And it was Sri Jiva Goswami who took the responsibility of ensuring that there was a proper place for him to stay and for him to receive the guests, the Vaishnavas who would come. Sanatan Goswami built this wonderful temple of Madan Mohan. Srila Jiva Goswami took it as his responsibility to make sure that these temples, that these deities, that these assets of our movement remain secure in the generations to come. You see, we have to realize what North India was like at that time. North India was ruled by the Mughals, the most successful and powerful Islamic empire in the history of the world. And emperors like Akbar were very generous and broad-hearted, and they wanted the Vaishnav traditions to flourish. But not all of them were like Akbar. There was always a risk, a danger. For 1,000 years, since the time of Babur, Braj has been a place for armies to come and raid for its wealth. If you're a king, if you're an emperor, if you're a sultan, and your treasury is being emptied out, and taxes aren't enough, what's the best way to get more money? Send your army on a raid. And what's the richest place for raids to happen? Temples. Because this is where all of a community's wealth is invested. So every couple hundred years, an army would pass through Braj. And you know, Braj is an easy target because the land is flat. It's not protected by mountains or big fortifications. An army could easily sweep through, raid the temples, destroy a few, and go on their march. This happened again and again and again throughout the history of Braj, much before the time of Mahaprabhu even. Why, we should ask, why is it the case that we can still go to Vrindavan today and visit the temples of the Goswamis? Why are they still there? If we look at it historically, there's no reason they should be there. Because they were prime targets for anyone who wanted wealth and who wanted power. The reason they are there is because of Jiva Goswami. He ensured, he made sure that he developed treaties with edicts, agreements with the Mughal emperors in Delhi, making sure that the land of the Govindadev temple always belonged to Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And how did he do this? He worked with the Rajputs in Rajasthan, who were the counterbalance to Mughal power. They were the main Hindu counterbalance to the Islamic empire there. So he developed relationships with people like Raja Todar Mal and other Rajputs, and through them got documents signed and written by Akbar and other emperors. We can still see this. It's there in the city palace of Jaipur in the Vrindavan Research Institute. There's one wonderful edict by Akbar giving the land of the Govindadev temple in the name of Sri Jiva Goswami, whom he describes as a poor and worshipful man. He says, this is a poor and worshipful man. In his name I give the land of Radha Govinda temple for him and for future generations of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. He did this for each one of the Goswami temples, ensuring that politically, legally, our temples were secure. You see? It wasn't that, oh, I'm a great scholar, I can't get my hands dirty with things like management and law and politics. No. He served in every capacity. Yes, we're going to get down, we're going to do this seva as well. Let's work with the politicians, let's work with the leaders, let's work with the law to make sure
that this wonderful gift that we have received from Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatan is secure for the generations to come. When those armies of Aurangzeb came through Vrindavan, they destroyed, but they did not destroy everything. Those armies are often mad, but they're not blind. They are given direction based on what the agreements are in place with the emperor. And because of those agreements, for each one of the Goswami's temples, Jiva Goswami did this seva for Sri Raghunath Das Goswami at Radha Kunda. He did this seva for Rupa Goswami's temple, Govinda Dev. He did this seva for Madan Mohan, for Sri Sanatan Goswami. For each one, Sri Radha Raman, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. For each one of the Goswamis, Jiva Goswami said, my seniors, my superiors, let them be engaged in bhajan, in writing, as directed by Mahaprabhu. I will take the burden of making sure that they have a peaceful place to work and that they can leave this world peacefully knowing that Mahaprabhu's legacy is in safe hands. This should be a great inspiration for those of us engaged in management seva or leadership work or business or politics or law, that this too can be used in the service of Mahaprabhu. In fact, one thing more I'll tell you about this. That Jiva Goswami, before he left this world, so conscious he was about his responsibility, that he left a will, a final testament, talking about a succession plan in each area. You see, he was so conscious of the future in terms of preaching and guiding the community. He trained the next generation, Srinivas Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, Shyamanand Pandit, whose glories individually are so great we could speak on each one in a separate way. But in the area of deity worship also, he wrote in his will, he said the worship of Govindadev, the main temple in Vrindavan, should go on in the care of Gopaladas, one devotee. He was so close to Gopaladas. In his Harinamamrita Vyakaran, he writes, he prays that may I have eternal association with Gopaladas in this world and in the next. And he leaves it in his hand and then specifies who's going to receive it after Gopaladas, be head pujari in the temple. And in terms of management of the legal aspects, he gives it to one devotee named Vilasdas. He specifies every aspect of the future in his will, and then that will is signed by each of the great devotees who are present in Vrindavan at that time. It's a wonderful, beautiful document. You can still see this. It's been nicely scanned and preserved at the Vrindavan Research Institute. Here's what's amazing. This is the earliest known will in all of India. This is the earliest testamentary document. And for this reason, it is studied by people who have no interest in Vaishnavism, but are studying the history of law in India. What this means is that Jiva Goswami was using the most innovative, latest legal instruments available in his time. For us, a will may be something commonplace, but at that time, it was unheard of, or very rare. And so this is the first will that we know of. He understood what are the technologies, the legal instruments, the skills, the knowledge available, and how we can use it in Sri Chaitanya's service. And in this way, he secured the temples of Vrindavan for the future. In 1606, he composed his will. And he said, in that will, he writes that it will be reconfirmed by me on my deathbed, just before departure. And indeed, in December of 1608, on this day, that will was signed again. It was countersigned by Jiva Goswami and all the people of Vrindavan, confirming that his plans for the future are in place, they are intact. A great scholar, a great teacher, a great leader, a great manager, and above all, a humble, devoted servant of Sri Krishna and of the Vaishnavas in Vrindavan.
These are qualities and attributes that one rarely finds in one person. Almost never can you find them in a single individual. And it would be unimaginable, unthinkable, even mythological for us, perhaps, if it were not the case that even in our own times, we know of someone like this. If we think of our own Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and you think about his qualities, you will see that he embodies Srila Jiva Goswami in the most amazing way. Srila Prabhupada himself, he was a great scholar, no? 60, 70 volumes of books that are studied by scholars all over the world today, that give us great institutions of learning, places like Bhagavata Vidyapit here, hundreds of devotees of great intelligence and background spending their days analyzing what Prabhupada has given us. His English is of a level that if we study it, just through his books, our English capacity can become at PhD level. He's a scholar. And that would have been enough for us to glorify Prabhupada. But that wasn't even close to all. Not only was a scholar, but he was a teacher of great skill. If you hear his conversations, his morning walks, maybe you've heard some of them, he was teaching and training his disciples through argument and philosophy and debate. And he knew exactly how to encourage every one of his disciples, put them in exactly the right position in the right seva. He was a great leader. The inspiration that he provided, everything would just manifest around his leadership ability. He could take the most humble person and empower them to serve in leadership ways that they did not know that they had. People who had never written a word became editors of magazines. People who had never managed anything became managers of institutions. People who had not built anything in their life built great temples because he was a leader. And a leader means someone, not someone who does it all, but someone who can see the capacity in another person and inspire them to achieve that capacity in the service of a greater goal. That's a leader. Someone who can see the capacity that is present in another person and inspire them to achieve that potential in service of a worthy goal. And Prabhupada could do that with the most humble person and the greatest person. From the person on the street to George Harrison, Prabhupada knew how to inspire everyone to their leadership potential. That's a leader. And of course, he was a manager. He set up ISKCON in such a way that even after 50 years, we're here, and not only here, but flourishing, that the movement is growing. He set up an organizational system, an institutional structure. He put in legal instruments in place. He fought for the stability of his temples. Scholar, leader, teacher, manager. This was Srila Prabhupada. This was our Srila Prabhupada. And so it is no coincidence that Srila Prabhupada's mission began at the temple of Srila Jiva Goswami at Radha Damodar. That he spent years there engaged in meditation, in humble seva, in writing, seeking the blessings of Srila Jiva Goswami and Sri Rupa Goswami. Because his life and his work embodied the qualities and the power of Jiva Goswami. This is why Srila Prabhupada, he says, he has a beautiful quote. He says, "My mission is to develop the glories of Srila Jiva Goswami all over the world. And I think you should cooperate with my mission." He writes in one letter. he sends back to India. This is my mission, to develop the glories of Jiva Goswami all over the world. Srila Jiva Goswami's temple is my heart and soul, he says. And if Shri Radha Damodar desire, one day devotees from all over the world will come to this temple, the heart of our Krishna consciousness movement. So on this day of Srila Jiva Goswami's disappearance, Srila Prabhupada actually instructs very specifically. He says on the appearance day of Jiva Goswami, on one conversation, he says we should get together to glorify Srila Jiva Goswami and to study his sandarbhas. He says this for his appearance. Of course, it applies also for his disappearance day. On a day like this, we can take a moment to look back at our tradition, at our heritage, and be proud of who it is that we follow. Who are our forefathers? You know, as devotees, we should not be proud. We should always be the servant of the servant of the servant. But there's one area in which we can properly use our tendency to be arrogant, to be proud. And this is in being proud of our acharyas, of our heritage, of the tradition to which we are so fortunately belonging. People like Srila Jiva Goswami, people like Srila Prabhupada, whose abilities we can scarcely imagine, we can hardly fathom how all these things could exist in a single person. They are our forefathers. This is our heritage. This is the gift that Srila Prabhupada has given us, is Srila Jiva Goswami. And so it's so wonderful that we've come together on this day to glorify him, to appreciate him. Because Jiva Goswami is someone that the whole world looks at and says, wow, here's someone of extraordinary capacity. And guess what? He's ours. He's ours. We belong to the family of Srila Jiva Goswami. This is a matter of great joy, great happiness, great pride for us. And we can take this opportunity to remember him, to glorify him, and especially to understand his mood and his mission. So, in these few minutes, I wanted to convey to you a sense of, if we look at him from a historical perspective, even if we do not go into the mood and mission of his writings, and we just look at him from a distance, he's brilliant like the sun. Just from that historical perspective, he is the greatest philosopher. But now, I want to conclude, and His Holiness Radhanath Swami will give us insight into Srila Jiva Goswami's internal mood, into his mission, into that aspect of his devotional personality that actually inspires everything he does. What makes him such a wonderful manager and a leader and a scholar and a teacher is his heart of bhakti. And that heart, Radhanath Maharaj will share with us. So with that, thank you so much for this opportunity, for giving me the chance to glorify him. I'm very, very grateful. Because this is my last day here at Govardhan Eco Village for this visit, I want to just take a moment to offer my appreciation for all the devotees here, particularly all the residents of this place. You've created a holy place, a place where the Goswamis are present. One can feel their presence in all these ways, in their temples, in their deities, Sri Sri Radha, Madan Mohan, Lalita Devi, in the culture of knowledge and Vaishnav scholarship that is created here in the Bhagavata Vidyapita.
in the mood of service for the Vaishnavas. That was exemplary in the Goswamis. Dhira, dhira, janapriyo. In the welcoming way in which you welcome all guests that come, whether for a day or for a week or 2 weeks, whether we are yoga students or whether we are professors or whether we are business people or whether we are doctors, whether we are gentle or whether we are ruffians. Dhira, dhira, janapriyo. You welcome us with the mood of the Goswamis. And I want to particularly appreciate the brahmacharis here who live and work and serve in Govardhan Eco Village. Each one of these brahmacharis is so well qualified, materially speaking, that they could succeed at the highest levels in the world with their degrees and their qualifications and so on. And yet they serve humbly here, cooking, cleaning, assisting devotees, taking care of guests, not expecting anything in return. This is an amazing thing. Prabhupada says that to have great qualification is something that is worthy of respect. But if one has that great qualification and yet is able to serve in a mood of humility, he says, that is extraordinary. That person is truly a recipient of the Lord's mercy. And it's just incredible how the brahmacharis of this place, how they embody that. In looking at their behavior and their demeanor, we could never tell that they're so qualified in all these ways. And yet they're serving all of us in such a humble way. It's really an example. So all of these ways, I want to really express my heartfelt appreciation for this opportunity to be in your association here at Govardhan Eco Village, and especially to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj for inviting the Lord to be present in this dham, for creating the holy place. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tirthi kurvanti tirthani swantastena gadabhrita, that it is the Lord's devotee who creates the holy place. Why? Because he carries the Lord within his heart. And any place that the Lord is present, that is the holy place. So thank you all so much for this opportunity to be here today with all of you. And please pray to Srila Jiva Goswami that he may show mercy to me and to all of us on this particular day, that we can remember him nicely and glorify him properly. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I've gone over time. With this, I'll turn it over to His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. Srila Jiva Goswami Pada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna, let's thank Radhika Raman Prabhu again very loudly. Hari bol, Hari bol, Hari bol. Thodi der mein Maharaj ji ka yahan pravachan hoga FM 100 pe. Unka Hindi mein anuvad aayega. Tab tak hum thodi der kirtan karenge. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.